forget about that whole thing on social media about, like, you know, you go hang your coat and you can do your other side hustles and stuff. I mean, I think for especially the executive office of the president is high pressured.
Mm-hmm.
It's high stakes,
mm-hmm.
high cost of making a mistake.
I mean, to get a gig like that, do you have to know people in addition to being...
It's your work.
You think it's purely your work.
And that's why for me, it's not to say that, you know, I'm the best, but I am looking at the best, like,
right.
The better than the best.
Right. Hey guys, welcome back to Financially Incorrect, a podcast sponsored by FX Spesa. I am your host, Barack, and first and foremost, I hope you're having a fantastic 2024. This is our first day in studio. Today is actually the 15th of January, so it's been a really good break. I hope you guys made sane and good financial decisions in December. Didn't spend all your January money there. So today, before I kick off... the lab code's gone. Before I kick off our episode and talk about who our guest is, I'm going to go and read a few comments from our last couple episodes off of YouTube. The ones that I like. The comments I like, that is. So one comment is, nice interview. My only query is, you guys haven't touched on something as significant as the COVID-19 period, how he fared through the challenges of that period and the lockdowns. This is Anthony, which, you know what? I will send this to him and see what his response is, and I'll respond to you on that. Great interview. The interviewer has great questions. That was good. Thanks for that. Someone says, don't ever estimate being born in a rich family. That's interesting. Another one says, I'll say this. I was roped in by my curiosity for BND, but my word, Anthony is a delightful storyteller. He's a CEO with a lifeless spirit, moniker of a CEO. He's still my boy. I loved this conversation. Jockey's episode. Jockey, give us so much pride to wear your pieces. Keep up the hard work. Love this interview. Share the practical details of running a business. A comment from the Philip episode. He says, started listening to this episode in an audio and I couldn't tell the voices apart. You know, there's someone else who said this. I tried to listen back to it and I think our voices are very different. So I don't know. Then we have another episode from a chief psychologist who says, body language. The interviewer should note that by closing his arms in his posture, he's locking himself in and he's not free. He should try and be more open and have a better body language. So I will try and do that. Jazz, that's your hashtag name. And then a final comment, one of our latest ones from Anna Jorogi's episode, actually. I've really enjoyed your podcast a lot this year, 2024. I'm going to follow each episode as they are game changers. Sounds great. Some good comments from last year. So thank you guys. Thank you guys for commenting. Thank you for supporting. I think we've grown our Financially Incorrect network to a good size. I think we have about 9,000 subscribers, if I'm not wrong. Also, we were featured as one of the breakout content creators on Spotify for 2023. So thank you guys so much for your support. Thank you for being part of this community. And this year, we're looking to get you better stories, better money stories, and learn more. So to kick off 2024, I have with me Laban Cliff Onserio, who at the moment is the regional director of the Chief of Staff Association. And the offices are based in Kenya.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you, Barack. And first of all, hats off. Good job. I think I've been an ardent follower. Mm-hmm. Maybe we did not leave our comments.
Yeah.
But we should also have a chance to just say that Financially Correct is really growing.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with the content out there. And more reason why I said, you know what, this is a good opportunity to have a chance as well.
Yeah, to come back.
To speak as well of my finance story. You mentioned about December holidays.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Well, yeah, yes. So let's start there. What were your December holidays like?
Oh my goodness. I think for me, I made some poor decisions, maybe I would say. In the sense of just, you know, when you're going out there to the families, uh-huh. and you're visiting your aunties, your uh-huh. uncles, at times, you just find the money just, here's for the unga, Christmas.
Right.
So I think to the point of my wife even asked me, like, are you a politician or what's happening? Because we went to this uncle, right. and, you know, although you're just, but it's
was this, once was this in a back while. In Shags or were you visiting
in
people
Shags,
in Nairobi?
You know, right. in okay. Shags. Okay. And it's expected that when you drive there,
yeah.
you know, with your kids and families, there's just some sort of an expectation that,
yeah.
you know, you'll come from Nairobi with something, small.
You're not going empty-handed.
But anyway, yeah. And here we are, back to the city, ready to make get more 20, and the, make better decisions.
A question, actually, a story before your question. I had an uncle who, he'd come in from the States, and every time he'd go to, we're from Western, every time we'd go, he'd go to the ATM, and he would remove as many 150 bobs as possible. Because he was like, everyone I see, I'm just handing out 100 shillings or 50 shillings.
It's better than having the thousands that I have. Because you know, personally, the hundreds is better because, you know, smaller denominations.
Did you go in with a plan? Like when you were going into December, did you say, okay, I have 20,000 shillings I want to spend?
Yes.
And, you know, like that's what I've, I guess if you're not calling it the black tax amount, that's what I've set aside.
Yeah.
And then you spent a lot more than you had planned.
100%. Yeah. So I had a figure in mind. Taking care of fuel, taking care of just, you know, the Christmas day, you know, lunch and all that for family as well. And also for the travel up country as well. So I was like, okay, wait a minute. It's just that you do not expect the aunties and uncles and grannies that you're going to meet. And grannies, maybe, of course, the ones who are also related to your parents. So, you know, African culture-wise, it's respectful to just go in and give something. So I say I must have overspent and maybe doubled what I had in mind.
But
it's not a problem because, you know, you rarely see them.
Yeah.
And I think there's always that bit about, you know, you're happy and, you know, there's some sense of they pray for you. And, you know, and you're here because of them, because they took care of you when you were much younger.
Okay. What kind of hole, I mean, maybe it's not a, like a, maybe the word's not like a hole.
Yeah.
But when in January does that hit you? Does the overspending in December, when does that, like for you personally and based on your experience, when does it usually come in?
Good question,
do you then regret, you like, those 20 G's, I should not have spent that extra 20 G's?
So it hits home when the fee structure is sent to your email and say, hi, welcome to 2024. Just so you know. And by the way, I have twin boys. So I get a discount on the second twin. But it's, you know, it's something considerable. But, you know, it's still a hefty amount considering that you're paying, quote, double than maybe what any other singleton parent will pay. So I'm happy that, of course, thanks to my wife, who's more like, who's, well, you know, kind of a CPA. She said, you know, before we travel, let's at least put a deposit on the fees. So we're not clear the term one fees, but at least you had a deposit. But the reality checks in when you come back home, you're unpacking your boat with all these pleasantries from the village. So at least the food budget is somewhat covered. There's a bit of a cushion there. But the fees, term one fees, that's when reality hits.
So if you don't mind me asking, how old are your boys?
So the boys are turning 4 in March.
Okay.
This year. So they're in, you know, K1.
So they're so just starting out school.
But we took a decision as a family to invest more in their, like, you know, nursery school, that sort of nurturing set level. Set the base. Hoping that we do not pay for university fees because we hope that they'll kind of get their talents out there and their skills out there. But it's pretty considerable. We're seeing the benefits. So, of course, I'm not disputing the fact that education is expensive and you need to, if you want good education, you really need to invest into it. But it takes a sacrifice from the parents' bit. Oh, and not forget, Barack, rent.
Of course.
Because even the landlord,
if
you imagine what I did in, you know, the rural place, like I went in and I overspent by they know, oh, wait, my tenant is going to send me money anyway. So for them, maybe they've also made commitments into their own children's fees.
And waiting, and they're using the rent based on it. Okay.
A
question. Around your travel to, when you're going up country to visit, based on off of previous years that you've done it and the rate of inflation this year, how much more expensive was it for you to to go down?
So remember, we're coming on the back of COVID and there was really, like, say about two and a half years of no travel, just being there and stuff like that. And maybe even just seeing the trends. You can even see the flights, the opportunities for, you know, how the marketers are doing it. The travel agents are really coming up with really innovative ways of just hooking you to, like, taking a holiday out of town, out of the country. So I would say, even with the dollar and with the fuel prices, I think I... what I was shocked was the kind of the budget that went into fuel. Because ideally it would be expensive. And this is just Nakuru.
Right.
I mean, just driving to Nakuru and maybe a few towns here and there. You know, you're like, wait a minute. This tank would be full on, say, 10K.
Mm-hmm.
Easy, give or take.
Yeah.
But now a full tank on the same car,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's about 15,000.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at it, it's something like a 5K increase based off on like a year and a half of trying comparison.
Right, right.
So that in itself, and I would say maybe I spent two full tanks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's average 30K only on fuel. On
fuel alone.
For the entire Christmas. And of course you have to budget the running around and stuff.
Right.
So I'm like, wow, it's getting quite expensive.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at it, it was maybe much better than flying out.
Yeah.
Because that
would
two full tanks will be ticket for one.
Yeah. that's a lot of money.
Comparison as well.
Do you have any personal what would I call it? Personal tics or personal things that you do that you begin to realize that you're a lot more conscious about the amount of money you're spending. So for example, I mean, I think before things really, really started getting expensive, I mean, I would pick, you know, I would pick things in the supermarket.
Okay.
But now I find myself looking at the prices of things and comparing prices a lot more.
Yeah.
And I just find that, oh, you know, the same amount of money that I generally would have over the course of a month now doesn't take me that month. Yeah.
So when the prices of things, and for me, it's now looking at bulk.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole conversation we're having in maybe say between my wife and I, which is the household, the Cliffs household.
Right.
Which is, should we maybe now go more for wholesale?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it better now to just get a wholesale and then now try and really just plan ourselves within the quarter instead of the month? Because then you realize it becomes very expensive.
Right.
But then again, you know, the other side is she's like, okay, wait a minute. There's about perishability as well, you know, because you might just buy for a whole month. But then again, the fruits perhaps would go bad or they'll not be able to do that.
Right.
So that's one bit. There's a bit about shopping in the outskirts. I mentioned about coming from Shags with a boat full of
stuff.
Bananas. I'm Kisi, so you can expect green bananas. But then there's a whole thing about like, you know, can we freeze them, for instance?
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, they'll stand for a while. There's something I came across as well online where you can just, you know, peel the potatoes, really chop them up, boil them, and then pack the tomatoes, actually.
Uh-huh.
The tomatoes, and then they can... they can actually last you a bit longer, right?
Yeah.
So those are some of the, you know, few hacks. The chicken you get from home.
Right.
They come in like, you know, all slaughtered and really packed nicely and freeze them for a while. And that perhaps will last you for the quarter. So personally, small hacks, because I think food for us was like, if you look at the household cost items, I mean, I mentioned fuel, but that was just because of the travel.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you look at it in terms of rent, the food really is quite a, it's a number one at the moment.
Right.
And you mentioned about, maybe it's about the inflation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the price, looking at the cost of transporting that food as well to where you mentioned about your supermarket errands.
Right, right.
I have seen like in Nairobi right now, there are all these riders who actually maybe get food from a, maybe would be cheaper farms and then now deliver it to your doorstep. But then again, if you look, if you compare that to the price of how you'd get the kills, for instance, be it, say, from Limuru versus you going to, say, a Naivas or a Quick Mart and getting it, then you realize, okay, wait, it's really a small margin. So lots of research.
It's just expensive.
Yeah, it's just expensive.
Right, right.
You're still going to pay for the cost of
at some point,
transport.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about the fuel prices, which was just announced, you know, this weekend as well.
The 5 shilling.
200 bob,
yeah, 5 shilling drop, yeah.
Plus, so, oh God, so you look at the rider, so you pay him maybe that 100 bob for delivering your kills. For instance, you know, you might just feel like topping it up because he still hasn't broken even.
Okay. Interesting. So let's get into it because you've had a colorful career.
Thank you.
Right? Worked at worked at GE, worked at Nation, worked at Standard, worked in the office of the president.
Yeah.
So there's lots to talk about there.
Thank you.
To see how that manifested and what you did with the money during that whole that whole period. But maybe we can begin with your concept of money. You know, like where do you think your concept of money came from, and how and what money means to you?
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. right? And this can be as back as, you know, when you were a kid, wherever you, whomever you think imprinted that upon you,
yeah.
and where you got that from. Yeah.
Thanks so much. And I'm grateful yeah. for the colorful career that yeah. you mentioned. I think it's sheer hard work, and I'm grateful for that. And still, we never get there. We still continue to bettering our best.
Yeah.
I got the concept of money and the idea of just trying to be a good steward from my parents. From a very young age, my parents ran a wholesale shop back in Nakuru, and it is called Libros Wholesalers. So yeah. I would see them moving lots and lots of stuff, food stuff and all that, household goods and stuff. And I would actually, I remember vividly, my mom gave me some, you know, bundles of money to go and bank mm-hmm. at a very young age. Mm-hmm. So ideally, I will not, of course, present myself. She'll just be like, carry this amount of money mm-hmm. and then we'll go and bank. So mm-hmm. I would see how she would do that. But now that's on a childhood basis. But growing into my adulthood, I realized, okay, maybe there was a thought that I'm living in abundance, mm-hmm. which is not. And maybe this is something that as a parent I'm learning right now. Mm-hmm. I think to the children, it might look like, oh, everything is easy, mm-hmm. Easy busy. But, you know, you don't see them waking up very early. You don't mm-hmm. see them going to negotiate for prices mm-hmm. with the suppliers. So I think going into my adulthood, I got feedback that, hey, you need to be a bit careful with your money, because the pocket money at Strathmore, mm-hmm. meant for a month, I'll deplete it in a week.
Right.
They'll be like, wait a minute.
Right.
Please, it's not available. Right. Money doesn't grow on trees, right? Right? So I learned that a lot from my mom.
I mean, sorry. So do you think that you were cushioned then? You feel like you
exactly.
were cushioned a lot then in your yeah. childhood and teenagehood probably?
Yeah. Like any parent will do.
Yeah.
Like any parent will do. You know, you don't want to tell your child like, hey, it took me like the lengths you had to go to pay the fees, right?
Okay.
So like any parent, you try and cushion the child to, you know, not really feel that, you know, to so that they can concentrate on the education.
Okay.
But as you grow into adulthood, you realize, okay, wait, the parent now has to tell you that, hey, by the way, I actually took out a loan
right.
so that you can go to university.
Right.
But
right.
you don't realize that. You just see the fees being paid.
Right.
So for me, that was a reality that hit me in my, say, for instance, my late teens.
Okay.
That, hey, it actually takes a lot of work to
yeah.
get this cash and
yeah.
to get by.
Right.
So I'm grateful to my parents for that. But as I went into adulthood, I also made some mistakes, which I got feedback on. I should say my brother seems to be pretty good at it, mm-hmm. Maybe because he's also in that finance economy space. Mm-hmm. That's steady. And he tries as much as possible to, you know, infuse the same based off on mm-hmm. what he's doing. Like, mm-hmm. hey, you know what? Are we saving as a family? What are we doing? Are we doing projects together? Mm-hmm. So personally, it's something I've picked up. It's rubbed off against
right,
rubbed
right.
off from me.
So it was more indirect than a direct exactly. conversation that you,
yeah.
you had with any of your parents or
yeah.
other than your older brother, I'm assuming.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. Actually, younger. It's funny.
Oh, really?
I'm learning a lot from him. on the finance bit, 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
I think maybe he's on the financial capital.
Yeah.
More on the social capital.
right, right.
Bit. So for instance, I mean, yeah. some of the bad mistakes I made, and you mentioned about General Electric.
Right.
I'm humbled to have been appointed at GE when GE was setting up shop in okay. Nairobi.
How did that happen?
So GE came into Strathmore University mm-hmm. and they were there recruiting.
You were in your last year at
yes,
the time.
And I was just, you know, I was, you know, this student who doesn't know what's going to happen mm-hmm. afterwards. Like anyone in uni, you usually don't care. You're
yeah.
just there. PwC was there coming to recruit, you know, those graduate recruitments,
right,
KPMG,
right.
Google, Deloitte. So we're happy that, you know, some of these employers would really come.
Mm-hmm.
My only wish is that we took it a bit seriously, like mm-hmm. as students, you know, you realize, what am I going to do there? I'm going to get a job.
Right.
It's never that mm-hmm. direct. So I'm happy with the chance that General Electric gave me because they attended the graduate recruitment.
Huh.
They set up shop in one of the fields at Strathmore, and then we're like, okay, wait a minute. Hi, what's your name? I'm Laban, and what do you do? I'm interested in HR at the time. Oh, okay, cool. And just dropped your CV. And wow, I think maybe it's because of the impression I made to the mm-hmm. Recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call to just have a sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to have joined, this is a big conglomerate, setting up shop in Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
To be there in the early stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, with working for GE, it's a good company, a good employer. I was earning upwards of about 150,000.
Right. That was your first salary.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I had a chance at Career Connections, but it was quite brief. But I'm happy that I had a chance on People Strategies.
Right.
But GE was kind of my proper early career. I joined the early career development program. That's right. ECDP.
Right.
And 150K. So my mistake was that I don't know how you say it. You know, you and it's, oh, finally I made it.
Right. Right.
Forgetting that there are people in this industry, for instance, who'd earn 1.5 million.
Right.
So I'm happy also on the sense of, you know, you might feel like a recent graduate or you're working for PwC, you're working for KPMG. I'm saying the big four firms.
Right.
Because, for instance, that will be above that competitive salary.
Right.
And then I was in a servant's quarter paying 7,000 shillings.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, I wish I never moved out of that servant's quarter.
So so you move out of the servant, the servant's quarter.
Yeah. Okay. As anyone would start, you know, one room, let me just say, because in a one room place, you know, you have your kitchenette, you have your bathroom, and you have your bed.
Your bed and bedstock living room.
Yeah, where you know, where I stayed on for most of my campus life. But I felt like I should have stayed on.
Mm-hmm.
I should have stayed on so that I save on the rent.
Right.
Because the push factor was, I think this is a pressure for, you know, trying to really be cool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone is staying up in the upmarket places, the Lovingtons, the Kilimanis, the Clear Leisure, where mm-hmm. rent in, for instance, per month would be upwards of 50, 60K
mm-hmm.
for a one bedroom unit.
Right.
So my mistake was maybe moving out too soon. I should have stayed on and perhaps saved.
Right.
And then saved to have enough to have a mortgage deposit.
Right. So you didn't have any budgetary considerations when you were then moving to your apartment in Lavington.
Because here you're coming from a base where you're getting, say for instance, not more than 10,000 shillings as pocket money from your parents.
Right.
And then you're getting upwards of 150K in your account every month.
Right.
I mean, that's, first of all, it was a shock to the to your bank account, and you're like, yeah. So maybe I should have just jumped into. At the time, financially correct wasn't there. I would have been a bit more.
A bit more prudent.
Yes.
Okay. So you move in and you start living in Lavington. Yeah. So what does that do for your budget?
So of course, it takes a chunk. Mm-hmm. It takes a chunk of your salary.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, of course, as G setting up, the lots of moving parts, you know, it's high pressure, cutthroat environment. So for me, I felt that maybe I would have leveraged off that
mm-hmm.
to now purchase an apartment, because even the mortgage is cheaper when you're younger,
mm-hmm.
you know. There was also loss of travel.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I would have, you know, leased the place for somebody else to use.
Right.
So I took a dent
mm-hmm.
Took a dent into my savings, my disposable income.
Right.
Even now, the opportunity to purchase a car took mm-hmm. a while before I had my first car as well.
Right. Because
now I'm putting a lot on the rent. I should have put more on the
right.
But all's not lost. I changed employers. And of course, as you mature in your career, mm-hmm. you realize, oh wait, these are what guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Barack, there's something interesting I came across the other day. It's, you know, these affordable student houses?
Like the Savos and the Quetus
as well.
Right.
Like the investors are now thinking of, how do we create affordable living
mm-hmm.
for like the recent graduates? Mm-hmm. So you're not a student, but can we create affordable houses within these upmarket areas?
Right.
Because of course the push to live in these suburbs was so that it's convenient to work.
Yeah.
It's so that it's quite easy. Instead of you staying, for instance, in Limuru, and you're expected at work by, say, 7:30.
Right.
And that's like an hour's drive out of town.
Yeah.
So the investors are thinking about, like, affordable housing.
Right.
For recent graduates who are still trying to find themselves. And I think for me that would be revolutionary because it kind of creates a bridge.
Right.
Between your student living.
Yeah.
And your suburb.
Right.
Dream.
Right.
So where do you stay?
Right.
Instead of you staying somewhere really
that's too
far,
expensive. Right?
And you're really starting out in your career.
Yeah.
And I think for me that's gonna be quite good.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
It will be interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The ones I had was Acorn Holdings.
Yeah.
Let's say Quetu, because Quetu is more like mm-hmm. you know for the students. So let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you then move from You then move from GE.
Yeah.
You get into CNBC, right?
Yes.
That's
yes.
your introduction to the media space,
the media
right?
space.
Okay, so what's that like? What's the offer that you're then getting? What's the salary increment?
Mm-hmm.
And what pushed you actually to get into the media space?
So that actually was a pay cut. And let me speak about like, there's a verse in the Bible which talks about this talent. Your talent will feed you.
Right.
You know, and the feedback was from my GE experience was mm-hmm. that, you know, your strengths are more into media, marketing, PR, sort of a thing, which I never picked up
mm-hmm.
in campus. So that's the beauty of feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that feedback really helped me into where I'm at today,
mm-hmm.
because then I was able to complement my BCom degree with now my passion for media, marketing, PR, sort of mm-hmm. a career twist. At the time, of course, you remember GE used to own NBC Universal.
Mm-hmm.
NBC Universal owned CNBC International and CNBC Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a sort of a lateral move.
Okay.
But because I had to show and prove myself,
mm-hmm.
I took a pay cut.
Okay.
To go into CNBC.
Right.
Now remember about my SQ story?
Yes.
And my 7,000
yes.
rent?
Yes.
Perhaps that would have helped.
50, 60 G's. Right, right.
That would have helped to yeah. just cushion me from that bit. But the growth at CNBC was quite phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Within a year of working there, I got an award as the best newcomer in media.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave me now an opportunity for recruiters now to shift their or turn right. their eyes on me. And right. I'm happy that I moved now to Nation Media Group as a
okay.
anchor. Yeah.
And Nation, they...
I went back now again to a six-figure salary. So,
right.
Yeah, and then I think for Nation, it was not about the money,
mm-hmm.
but it was about what the job introduced you to.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned about my brother Teddy, and we have this joke all the time mm-hmm. at home, like, you know, you're the money bags, or he's, you know, the financial capital sort of a guy, mm-hmm. The social capital.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the social capital was largely built from my time at Nation.
Okay.
Because you're always interviewing CEOs, mm-hmm. you're interviewing CFOs about results,
mm-hmm.
you're interviewing entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So from a very young age, I had a chance to really interact with the who's and who's
mm-hmm.
in the business space. In East Africa.
A question though, as you're doing this, because it sounds like you're almost taking this social capital in lieu of yes. actual money, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Do you do that consciously? Why are you doing yeah. it consciously knowing that, okay, Nation's not paying me, you know, as much as I would like,
yeah.
but because I have access to these kinds of people, yeah. then I'll stick in the job.
Means to an end. Because
mm-hmm.
You need the social capital as a base,
yeah.
but it's through those social capital and that network that somebody say, hey, what's up? I have this role for you, for instance, mm-hmm. or I have this opportunity, mm-hmm. or there's this business opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these opportunities are never advertised.
Mm-hmm.
They're never, you know, put out there on social media,
mm-hmm.
but it's through the word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I knew at the back of my mind, right, I don't have the money, yes,
mm-hmm.
but I am in that road towards making the money because I'm still in my formative
because
mm-hmm. I was still in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like there was a pressure.
Okay.
And remember, I was single.
Yes.
So the budget of this single guy who maybe can, you know, go without dinner
yeah.
or would say, oh, let me not have breakfast at home. Let me go and have breakfast that's in the office.
Right, right.
Or having this meeting and, you know, I'd enjoy the breakfast out
right,
there.
Right, right.
So I feel for Nation that was a chance. It gave me a chance to also to do my studies.
Okay.
Go to Oxford
mm-hmm.
Through a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me that was what I was eyeing most
mm-hmm.
in terms of that formative, like having a sort of a strong base
mm-hmm.
In my career. But there comes a times where you cannot mess up. I mean, this is finances right now, of course, with Fambi.
Right.
And with having the fee demands that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Those ones don't care about your passion or,
mm.
oh, I want to change. Like, I don't feel like I can take a risk right now in terms of saying I'm changing my career to sort of, say, engineering.
Yeah.
I can't take that risk now.
Yeah.
No.
Because of the financial yes, demands and pressures that you have right
yeah.
now. Right.
Yeah.
So within those 5 years at Nation, do you have any increment? Is there a salary increment at all that you get? And at that time, you're still living in Lavington.
Yes.
So are you saving any money? Are you yeah. investing any money?
Yeah.
What's happening? At
through that social capital, it
yeah.
actually presented a huge opportunity in terms mm-hmm. of, let me not say a side hustle, but it also created a chance to do other things also over and above my business news anchoring,
right.
which was, say, business writing,
mm-hmm.
corporate emceeing,
mm-hmm.
doing voiceovers,
mm-hmm.
which I did not pay much attention to. But right now, when I'm in between jobs, it actually feeds you. Or it actually gives you an opportunity to say, because of those networks you created.
Right.
And somebody's like, hey, what's up? Can you come and do for me an emceeing job? Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll pay you an equivalent of 2 months of your salary.
Mm.
And that pushes you, I should say. Mm. So personally, I would say that that was a good learning experience in terms of what other things. So it is not really the salary increment.
Right.
It's the opportunities it presented, the context. Like, say, for instance, you want something at Safaricom and, you know, and God rest his soul. I mean, Bob Collin was a really big darling to the business journalists. You know, it'd be a call away. Like, what do you need? Yes, this is a comment about the financial results. And through that, they'll be like, oh, okay, cool. Can I help you on anything? Do you need any questions about M-Pesa, for instance? So personally, that really helps. And if there's any journalist training, Safaricom would call you because they you already have a relationship going, you know. KCB will be one as well. There's Joshua Igaro, is a, you know, good friend of journalist Paul Russo. I'm saying the companies which are listed,
right,
but you're already in a first name basis,
right,
with the mouthpieces in this company. And then you also see what entrepreneurs are doing, like what's big in the market, having your ears on the ground. I mentioned about the affordable houses thing with Acorn Holdings. Like, how do you get to know that?
Right.
It might not be announced, but it's through the social media, maybe results announcement, following these results keenly. Companies divesting, knowing that, for instance, when Everade is closing shop, then batteries is not the place to invest in at the moment because there's a struggle with that. Understanding government, you know, that's also quite key. And maybe that's how I jumped into State House.
Right.
Because now you pick an interest.
So,
well, not much of a salary increase, but the other avenues, the other revenue streams that it gave me, I think that was...
Without these other revenue streams, without the emceeing or the trainings or whatever else other people are offering you, would you have been able to survive as a journalist and keep up that same lifestyle that you were living when you were working for CNBC and GE?
Yes.
Yeah,
because it's a permanent job. Now, there's something that's scary out there in the job spaces right now. People are saying, you know what? I'm sorry, we cannot keep you on a permanent basis, but we're going to put you on a consultancy beat. But what that does is that it doesn't give you a bit of a solid ground
because
you just know, oh God, after 3 years, I have to look for something else.
Right.
And I've seen that a lot with the World Banks, you know, with some of the NGOs, that they will not give you
a permanent
job. Yeah. So it's good. The money's good. I mean, for instance, it'll be like, what, triple, 10 times your salary. But you just have to make it within those 3 years.
Right.
But I'm grateful for what my employers such as Nation gave me because that permanent role and the security of knowing that there's a pension, like that gave you a chance now to be solid and cement your footing in that employer.
Yeah.
And maybe any other extra income. And with that solid income, then you're already sure that the rent and food is taken care of. So whatever comes extra, it's for investments. You know, so that's how I survived it. I think
the five years,
and it was quite interesting. And
I have two questions to ask, and this I'm going to draw both from your experience in Nation and your experience as a chief of staff to the CEO of the CEO of Standard Group, right? Let's say, so how much were you being paid at that time at Nation? I would use as a baseline.
As a base,
because this is between 2013 to 2018.
Yeah, I'll still stick to around the same figure of 150.
150 to 100, right?
Average, yeah.
Average, right? So skip forward 7-8 years later, we're now 2023.
Yes.
At Standard Group, how much would a journalist of the same experience be paid?
Still the same.
Yes, same experience.
Average the same amount.
Average same amount, right? Yes, so this is seven, 8 years later.
Yes, it's still, because it was entry level into news anchoring. So you should say it's like, you know, business news anchor.
Right.
If it goes to like senior business news anchor, maybe that would go to about 200, 250. And I'm saying on an average basis because different media houses would
can go
skills.
Up and down, right?
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, based off of purely the value of journalist again in a vacuum, the value of a journalist against the amount of money that you're being paid or you would pay someone is exactly the same 7-8 years later against inflation against all these other things. So basically the person who's being paid now is being paid a lot less
yes.
than what you were being paid, right?
Yeah.
And so my question then comes down to, my question to you is around the value of a journalist, the business value of a journalist within a media organization. Because again, you've talked about the fact, you've talked about why the permanent job was so important for you in that it allows you to be able to have the pension and it keeps you, you don't have to keep thinking, oh, in another, whatever, I need to find something else. Mm-hmm. But then now the level of retrenchment again, that's happened in the different media organizations.
Oh, wow.
So my question is around, the media, the business value of a journalist against the tide right now.
You're honestly thinking like the CEO of a media house.
Right.
Which is on the financial value of having this sort of like 10 news anchors who are maybe taking the 150 as a base, of course, for this. So Barack, sadly, the cheese has moved in the media spaces. You really don't need a business news anchor for you to know what's happening in the financial industry or in the financial spaces. It could be like on your X, it could be like on an app, where you've subscribed to, say, the Bloomberg terminal or you've subscribed to the Reuters terminal. So more and more organizations are saying, wait a minute, I don't need 10 news anchors. I just need one. So, and everyone is looking at how to cost save because the cheese has moved. And I mean that you're no longer reading the 10 newspapers that you used to read or companies are ordering for newspapers. They would rather read the newspapers online. And that is affecting on the revenue streams. And moving more into the digital spaces. So I think, you know, speaking as the CEO and trying to really get the financial value of a business, you'll say, you know what? No, I'm not going for this. I'm only going for, like, say, for instance, one news anchor for the same amount, average thereabouts, because it's so competitive. There are many other people who want to earn 50,000 shillings or 100,000 shillings. So to just keep it at a good level, they'll still stick at the same salary. Of course, not to despise the fact that people who have over 10 years, remember I had my 5 years of experience. People who are over 10 years, maybe they're on 200 or 250 thereabout. And then now there's a conversation about not only just being a TV guy and saying, oh, wait a minute, I can actually be on radio. I can write for you and I can be on TV for, sorry, instead of paying 100, then give me 150 or give me 200. So you come in to the employer and you kind of have a sort of a, an agreement into what you're doing. So yeah, the industry is disrupted. That's the long and short of it. If of course it was a jump from you know, Nation into say another employer such as Safaricom or KCB, and I'm just using that because they published their salaries out there. I mean, definitely maybe that would have been a bit higher. But it also speaks into the skill set. Do they need that skill set? Well, maybe not, but they need something around communications. So that's what forced me now to even go back and do my master's. Go to Oxford, just trying to advance the skill sets. Yeah, because there's that security of knowing that I have a permanent job. So even if I invest in my diploma at Oxford or my master's at USIU, then there's going to be a return.
So my next question is, I mean, you're the chief of staff, the CEO, so you literally have his ear, you're right there. What are the things that CEO of a huge media group in this country is looking at to try and turn this ship around? And why is it so difficult? Because, you know, you'll see all these comments of everybody on Twitter of, you know, the old media houses are refusing to move. And they and it seems so simple. It seems so easy to digitize. Having sat literally at you know, at the CEO's CEO's door, so to speak, what are the things that they are considering and why is it so difficult? For the organizations to just shift and take a better business model.
Thanks, Barack. I mean, I think I got that role and I feel it was based off on also my stint after Nation. And we'll speak about the State House experience, which is also a pay cut. But the thing is, it's the level of experience that I was bringing on board. Having mentioned that, you know, the media space was a disruptor, is disrupted, and is still undergoing disruption. And I really feel like the ones who innovate will survive. Was a bit that I had this sort of a level from a private sector, General Electric, CNBC on the financial news as well, and then going into Nation. And I feel like now going into Standard was trying to be more of a consultant, of a behind-the-scenes person, to help my colleagues in the executive management, just trying to see, okay, wait, this is what the private sector would want off of a media house. Mm-hmm. This is what government would want off of a media house, and how we can actually collaborate to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. Because yes, we are hemorrhaging and we're losing money. We're losing talent. People are complaining of delayed salaries. Mm-hmm. So how do we innovate and really stay ahead? So that was my role behind the scenes. Okay, chief of staff might be a bit of a mouthful, but maybe as a strategy advisor. Mm-hmm. Because I know some people confuse the chief of staff to be a HR. I was already handling people.
Right.
But it was just a behind-the-scene person to see, hey, by the way, we can actually talk to government to be their distributors of, you know, MyGov newspaper, mm-hmm. which of course was happening. Mm-hmm. But how do we augment it and maybe do like a digital MyGov?
Right.
And then make money from the online audience. You mentioned about the diaspora. I mean, Financially Incorrect is being watched across the world.
Yeah.
You know, US, Qatar, and all these markets are watching what you're doing in Kenya. So then how do we make sure that also the news of the day is not missed with the Kenyan diaspora?
Yeah.
This government has taken a conscious approach into talking to the diaspora network.
Yeah.
There's actually a State Department for diaspora.
Yeah.
Now you ask yourself, why is that the case? Because there's all this diaspora financial inflows. Mm-hmm. So they would pay for information.
Yeah.
So then how do we make sure that our app is very, very active, that somebody in the States can subscribe to it, And you know, that can be another revenue stream for us. So I enjoyed my time, to be honest. I think you notice a sign my voice. It's just because the industry maybe was not ready for that.
Because I guess the wheels of change. Yeah, because my question really is coming to why is it so difficult to shift this old business model to one that be financially renewable? I mean, based on your experience, I mean, why is that so difficult?
Wow, there's something I learned in business schools called strategic intent, which is really the soul of the organization, right from the chairman, the board, the executive management, the staff might be so willing to actually change things and like just, you know, but then again, the industry or the macroeconomic environment might not really be ready for that.
Yeah.
So for instance, now we're talking about, talk about the cost of printing a newspaper. Mm-hmm. There's cost of ink. There's the cost of the paper. Mm-hmm. There's the cost of having people in those, you know, processing plants and the printing presses. So, yes, you might want to just kind of shift be a bit more conscious in how much you're spending. Mm-hmm. But remember, you're importing this cost of paper. You're importing all that. Mm-hmm. And when you're importing, there is the cost of the dollar. Mm-hmm. Now we were talking about like, and I'm happy with the colleagues at FX. They told me that, hey, if you have dollars, still stick to dollars because we're not seeing this going down. It's at 155 right now. We're still going to go up.
Yeah.
The pound, you're talking about 190. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So that's also speaking to the sense of like, hey, wait a minute. For my next employer, definitely I'm going to
ask for to be paid in dollars. Yeah.
But so I should say that it's not that the media houses are not innovating. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to stay ahead. Everyone wants to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, aside from the strategic intent, the macroeconomic environment is really
tough. It's not ready.
It's not really for your change. Because there's the dollar, there's the fuel. Yeah. Remember we mentioned about the fuel prices.
Right.
Just announced this weekend at over 200. And I'm like, wait, remember about the driver who has to leave here at 10 o'clock to deliver newspapers in Mombasa by 4 a.m.?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a tough environment. And by the way, hats off to the leadership in media houses because, I mean, you really have to be at the cutting edge. You have to just try and see, can this work? Can this work? Can this work? And try and test.
Yeah.
But I also feel like the government really needs to come through for the media houses. Mm-hmm. And here I mean just trying to see how to cushion the media houses from these shocks that are beyond them.
Okay. Mm. All right, let's get to the presidential appointment, in the office of the president.
Oh, wow.
How did you get that opportunity?
I'd say a very strong referral. Mm-hmm. And this was on the beat of what I did on air and rightfully in business journalism. Mm-hmm. And of course, just having the years on the ground. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I mentioned about my gov and some of these opportunities being put out there. Mm-hmm. So I applied and it was out of the, hey, wait a minute. I think this guy has done business news and can actually play well into this space. Mm-hmm. And remember, Tony Blair was in town at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, with Tony Blair coming into Nairobi and trying to really start the delivery units across Africa, there was a big opportunity in terms of just trying to see how do we communicate what the government is doing. Oh, God. And speaking of the same as being in the business space, there is a... And I'm happy about this, and I really want to talk about it. The psych about trying to learn, like pushing yourself to learn. Remember, I've not done, I don't have a government experience in my CV. Then I'm like, wait a minute, this is an opportunity, but then again, it's a pay cut because government salaries are structured and it's out there. It's very clear. If you're on this job group, you're earning this. If you're on this job group, you're earning this.
So how much were they paying you for?
Say
that?
Less 50k from where I was. So let's say average of 100,000 shillings thereabout. Average.
But doesn't, I've been told that you are working for the government, there may be a pay cut, but then you get...
Or the allowances.
The allowances.
Hey, but tell you what, don't factor that in when you're going into it, because look here, when I jumped into State House, then smack after 1 year and a half, we were smack in the middle of COVID.
Right.
So there was no travel. So really, it has to... It was about the passion as well into what you're doing. But I'm happy with the learnings. For me, it was just about... The question is, how does government work?
But are you telling me, I'm finding this difficult to believe, are you telling me that the position that you had, let me just...
Deputy Communications
Director. Yeah, Deputy Communications Office of the President, is being paid 100,000
I'm saying average. Okay, so you factor in the tax.
Yeah.
I'm saying a pay cut. Okay, let's put it as a lateral move.
Okay.
Let's put it as a lateral move because it was a job group R.
Okay.
It was a job group R. So when you're in a job group R, it's average still going to come into about 150 net. Remember what I was giving you was 150 gross.
Okay, 150 net.
Yeah, 150 net means on gross you should be on what?
I don't know. Two something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about 150 net. Okay. Actually, that's
you're taking
the correct
home.
Figure.
Okay.
And on average terms, because before they employ you, they look at, do you have a master's? Do you not have a master's? And by the way, that was one of my discouraging points because... I got a lower entry point because I did not have a master's degree. And immediately I realized that I signed up for USIU and I said, you know what? I have to get this master's
so
out of the way.
So with the master's, you immediately higher. Go up to a higher job.
Yeah.
Okay.
So some good advice to anyone who's considering some government roles.
Right.
Like you really need to have that, you know, the more certificates you have, the better your chances in terms of getting the upper level of the pay scale. Yeah. Than what than
you know,
somebody
else.
Who doesn't have that. They might have your same level of experience, but because you have a master's degree, there's a big chance.
Right.
Well, right now, I still say I'm considering roles at the World Bank or the IFC, so I'm pushed even to go for a doctorate.
Right.
So that it puts your profile at an upper level than maybe somebody who... It doesn't mean that I'm better off to the job, but I'm just saying, should that question come on the table, I'll be like, oh, where's your certificates? I'm like, you even have a doctorate.
Right.
Oh, well enough.
Okay.
But there's the other factors, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you're right. I should not, the fact of all the allowances, 100%.
Yeah.
Because again, if you get such a good government
what
job.
What are some of the allowances, for example? Like
travel?
Yeah. And how much would you get for travel or per diem? Or,
say, for instance, if you have a conference in the US with the president, you say earn an average per diem of per day of, say, about maybe 50,000.
A day. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's
like that's like a third of your salary.
And they're far in between.
But if, for example, so let me ask you.
Yeah.
The person who's working in your position now, let's say they say the president took what 50 trips or something.
Oh,
a crazy amount of trips over
doing
the last
math,
I'm doing the math.
But we have to know their job groups as well.
Right.
Yeah, we have to know their job groups. We have to know whether the government was sponsoring or there are also other organizations that were willing to cushion
right
in terms of the per diems and stuff, but remember that 50k is supposed to get you an accommodation in the UK in the US. Sorry, now how much is it to stay in New York?
But, that again is 50k a day.
Yes,
so if you're there for like
a week,
for a week. I mean,
I'm just putting it out there for the job group.
Yeah, wow.
Okay, you're right. I mean, in terms of the allowances, and then maybe this is some of the cost saving initiatives that are currently happening. Then you're saying, wait a minute, I don't have to be there for 5 days, to be honest.
Yeah.
Let me just go in and out, like 2 days, a conference is tomorrow.
But come on, let me ask you, seriously speaking, seriously financially speaking, who's saying, you know, let me go for 2 days as opposed to five. So I make 100.
No, it's a conscious decision. You notice there's a whole circular in government about the travel. The who travel should accompany, right. say the cabinet secretary for such travel?
Right.
Now, I agree with you. Before it was just like, you know, photographer, cameraman, for instance, communication. Like there'll be a whole bunch.
And each one of those people.
No, not each. Of course, right. they have different job groups.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just giving an average, which is something that has been printed out by the Salary Remuneration Commission, and you can get all that online. Yeah. Like in terms of when you travel, like how much the president earns.
Right.
You can tell.
Right.
And you know how much the president earns in his salary as well. Wow. So, do you travel to New York? You travel to New York? No, it's not always. It's not like every month you're going to be in New York. Yeah. I'm just putting that because that's the most, highest paid country.
Right.
If I'm going to Mombasa, for instance, it would be about 10,000 shillings.
Per diem,
average figures, I'm just putting out for per diems. But for me, it was not really that. It was just about like understanding that whole space. Of course, you enjoy the rides, you enjoy the... you know, the roads, you know, you're having a driver, having all these convoys and stuff.
Those are so even stuff strappings, like fuel and all of those costs. Yeah, you're not,
because you can get an allowance on the driver. You can get, if you're going in, you're in a convoy, so you save up on the transport bit. So maybe the car that you have, the personal car, can be an extra car at home because maybe you're having a government car. It depends on what role you've taken up. But also house, some people get a house allocated to you, which now helps you save on the rent. So you remember what I was talking to you about, like having a... Yeah. So if I had a government house, then that house that I would have bought...
You would have rented more, it.
It was financially prudent, then it would have been a rental income, right? No, but I didn't have a house. But I didn't get the government house. But if there was a chance to do that, then you'd have... saved on your rental because now your employer is cushioning you from that. And I think Barack, I miss those days. I miss those days where, you know, companies would actually give you those offerings. But it just speaks into the world we're living in.
Yeah.
For instance, my dad worked for the Pyrethrum board in Nakuru. And I remember us growing up in a Pyrethrum estate, which meant that you're in that whole, like, you know, my friends are colleagues with my father.
Right.
And it helped us, right?
Right.
I have friends who are working for like different farms in the tea estates. So they still have that, but there are not many jobs that give you like come into Kericho and will give you a house, a house in itself,
right?
Where you can live in. And then, you know, you save a lot.
Right.
So the cost of living in Kericho is not comparable to that for you living in the city.
Right.
Or you paying 50,000 for a house in Kilimani is not compared to what you're paying. Kericho, but you know, those jobs, I mean, they're not there anymore.
Right? Okay, question. What's it like working on the back end of the presidential office? What's the pressure like? I guess what's the day? Yeah, just what's the pressure like? What's the day-to-day processes like? Yeah.
First of all, it is what you make it. Forget about that whole thing on social media about like, you know, you go hang your coat and you can do your other side hustles and stuff. I mean, I think for especially the executive office of the president is high pressured. It's high stakes, high cost of making a mistake, and greater benefit of getting it right. For instance, our role as the delivery unit was to talk about the communications, like speak about the projects that are the heart of the presidency and talk about them. A passion project was, for instance, the Nairobi Expressway, which was overly talked about and misreported. But you're able to tell guys, look, this is the cost of the project. This is how long the project will take towards its completion. And talk about the would-be benefits out of it. Of course, there's a whole hype right now in terms of the dollar rates and how the prices have been adjusted. But I would speak as a user. Let me speak now as a Kenyan. Like, it can take me... from here right now to the airport, average of about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Something that I know if I had a flight and now I'm on your show, I will not show up for that day.
Yeah.
Like, I will not even come close. Yeah. I'll be like, no, I don't want to risk this.
Yeah.
It's going to take, I don't know how long the traffic, you know, congestion will be and stuff. So I feel like there are benefits. We're seeing marathons out here. People are now giving an opportunity. For Nairobi, the tourism levels. I'm not holding brief for the government.
Yeah.
But I'm not speaking as a user. You know, even so, the mere fact of even dropping my kids to school, That is one. There's the standard gauge railway.
Mm-hmm.
There are the different dams
mm-hmm.
On the ground. Now, what it taught me is also getting the perspective from, quote, the Mwananchi on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I are consumers on YouTube, for instance, on Financially Incorrect, or say, for instance, KTN or NTV. But there's somebody who doesn't have access to all this.
Mm-hmm.
But they're talking about how the dams have helped them in irrigating their farms so they can get more produce
mm-hmm.
and get more output for their families and their mm-hmm. households. And for me, that was the target for us to speak about. So it was quite interesting, understanding how the regional market is working. Working with the Tony Blair Foundation was amazing because
mm-hmm.
they work with many different delivery units across Africa. And it humbled me because mm-hmm. you realize also being a news anchor, you feel like, oh, you're the talk of town, you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But working in the government office also humbled me in the sense of taking a back stance to things.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you see out there perhaps might be misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you get it right behind the scenes?
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm very passionate about government communicating what it does,
mm-hmm.
because at times people just say, oh, let's just keep quiet over that story.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've created a perception mm-hmm. that the government is not working.
Mm-hmm.
But there are very many people behind the scenes who give off their very best
mm-hmm.
to get it done properly.
So let me ask you, so what's it like when you're, you know, I remember the time our former president had the council of things that they do with the journalists, and he was talking about the SGR contract and releasing the SGR contract. So what's it like when, you know, you're on the other side of the divide and you're seeing your boss talking about disclosing details of the SGR contract? Like, what's going through your head? What was going through your head at that moment and thinking,
wow,
is this something we're going to have to fix?
Yes.
And also, when if I was to quote, I mean, you're not government now, but like, I know when President Ruto had his recent thing with journalists, he talked about, I think, I don't remember what Parastatal he talked about, and he said he gave them a target to hit, I believe it was 5 billion in a year.
Yeah.
And I think the next morning, I saw a tweet from Julian's Amboko saying, actually that Parastatal, the year before had hit 8 billion in terms of revenue. So 5 billion would be nothing.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm asking you, what's it like to work within that position of for the president where they can either misquote things or say things that aren't necessarily true. And then you have to try and figure out how to fix it.
I'm happy you mentioned Julian Samir. He's a friend in the industry, a highly accomplished business journalist as well.
Yeah.
I mentioned about the high cost of making a mistake and really not getting it right properly. Yeah. I remember the interview you're talking about. I remember Mark Messiah was the one who was asking about the SGR contract. Mm-hmm. Can get really heated.
Yeah.
And these are your friends, man. These are guys you've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was not even about the contract. For me, it was a chance that he had an opportunity to even question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because some governments would rather you don't even speak about mm-hmm. it. They would rather you just keep quiet, let the populace don't know about it, or what you're doing, and just let's progress.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I am grateful for having even that media town hall, which perhaps will not be there,
mm-hmm.
without going into the details of, you know, whether the contract was shared or not.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, it was like the presidency, which is now all the people who are working mm-hmm. for him, is that you have an opportunity to have an open chance with the media.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that, of course, President Ruto is doing quite well,
mm-hmm.
having a whole plenary
mm-hmm.
with the journalists and having the journalists asking the tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
It even just shows that, hey guys, there's nothing to hide. This is my policy. This is how I want to achieve all my objectives.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned about like even giving like a briefing document
mm-hmm.
that reads 5 billion,
mm-hmm.
but on the actual sense it's mm-hmm. 8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you can actually lose your job
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because that's misrepresentation, that's misinformation, especially mm-hmm. to the highest office in mm-hmm. the land. It talks about the research bit. It talks about like how do you ensure that you're actually getting it mm-hmm. right. So personally, you're right on the bit about like being behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
There is always a chance that you need to network with a lot of the ministers
mm-hmm.
because some information is not always shared to the top.
Right.
And it's your role as the communication professional to ensure that the president is fully briefed ahead of time before mm-hmm. meeting this journalist, or before going to launch that project
mm-hmm.
and the speech augurs with the stats on the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty about being a business journalist, because mm-hmm. the numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. You look at the financial statements, you look at the government report, you look at the budget statement, and they all need to relate.
So do you reckon someone lost their job, probably?
Maybe a reprimand. Maybe a reprimand, yeah, but it can cost you. I mean,
it can cost you your job. Cost you, yeah,
because, I mean, look, you're going on air with a figure that wasn't correct or does not really fact checked.
Right.
And, wow, it the discipline you get for working for such an office,
yeah.
Oh, God, I should say that. I'm grateful to God for that chance, okay. Because it's excellence. Mm-hmm. It's like being on stage. Mm-hmm. You just have to make sure that even as you're announcing the Safaricom results, mm-hmm. can you imagine the cost of even just misquoting, you know, their results to the investors?
Yeah.
So it's the same level of discipline that I picked up and put it in the present. Not to say that, of course, you didn't have some mistakes, but it was also ensuring that the numbers you put on online, talking about the expressway project and talking at how much it costs, it has to really make sense.
Yeah.
Even with the conversion to the dollars.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. As we sort of try to get to the end part of our conversation. So how then do you survive? How then are you making money after you finish your stint in government? How then do you, what are you investing in anything? Have you invested in anything?
Yeah.
Or are you waiting for the pension to to come good?
No, I should say, first of all, I'm grateful also to, I feel like there's always a big break. My big break was, of course, going into executive management at a very young age. There's different packs into that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite welcome because, you know, going the higher you go in your career, there's always like a good remuneration out of it.
Okay.
But of course, it's a high pressure, high stakes job. So I'm grateful that within that period, I got to, you know, invest in land. There's something, Barack, that I don't know, maybe in business world, it's called intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's called in, you know, information, just social information. Maybe you're going out for golf and somebody tells you, hey, by the way, there's this property being sold.
Mm-hmm.
Are you keen on it? And somebody came to me and they say, hey, you know what? I have a friend who's actually selling a piece of land very far away from Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
I would not even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was somebody I was with in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be one of my best investments ever,
mm-hmm.
In terms of like a place where I can actually, you know, rare goats, rare sheep, for instance. Mm-hmm. And this is just a figure out there, for instance, because there are financials here. Invest in what? 3,000 right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
The price of a goat
mm-hmm.
is 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you buy your goat for Christmas?
You know, average? I don't eat. I'm allergic to goat actually.
The prices that went out
I
there.
I think 15, when I last
yeah when you 15, last checked
yeah when I last 10K? Checked I think it was there mm-hmm. about between 12 to 15.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? So the price of goat right now, for instance, because it's low season or something like that, or maybe just rare and fattened. So from 3,000, how does that price go to 15 to 20K,
right,
in December,
right?
So I'm like, oh, wait a minute, this is actually a good investment. So you can buy, like, you know, say for instance, start with 10 or instance, you know, and then see how that goes, fatten and then sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a simple thing,
right.
I mean, it's not really, you know, you go there, just have somebody look after the
right
goods and then sell over Christmas,
right.
It's a business venture I'm looking at.
Okay.
The corporate I'm seeing, I'm really grateful for the chance to work with the United Nations
mm-hmm.
in the, you know, I'm seeing some of the global.
Also, the United Nations pay very well.
Yeah, I admit.
Pay they do. Very well. In USD as well.
They do.
I had this. I've had a good effect that someone I know they was do. Paid $4,000 to wow. to MC
that's
an event.
Big. Yeah. That's really big.
You're not at that level yet.
Not yet. I mean, the people I look up to,
right.
to be honest, I mm-hmm. need to mention and shout out to her.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Gishuru for me stands out as mm-hmm. one of the top level corporate MCs, and she's very personable. And for me, when she was given the role to MC the Africa Climate Summit
mm-hmm.
with all those presidents who attended, I mean, I asked myself, does it
how
mean
much do you reckon she got for that gig?
Maybe the $4,000 you're talking about. $4,000. I'm like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
That will be an average for me. But for me, why her?
Mm-hmm.
Over all these years,
mm-hmm.
it means then she has something to give.
Yeah,
Zane Virgil was there, you mm-hmm. know. From maybe the male side, it'll be John C. Biokobu.
But even at that level,
yeah.
right? How much is actual value that you have and how much is that social network capital that you have?
Oh, God, it's, I don't know, it quadruples or it triples or something like that.
No, because I mean, to get a gig like that, do you have to know people in addition to
being... It's your work.
You think it's purely your work?
I can know you, but I don't want you to blab on camera in front of 20 presidents across Africa.
Yeah.
You can be my buddy,
but
I will not take the risk with you.
But if I'm not your buddy and I am good at my job, do you think I get, 100%, I get the gig?
100%.
Okay.
In fact, part of my passion is to now develop the next level of MCs. Because there are some times I'm called, but I'm not able to take that gig.
Mm-hmm.
And the client will say, you know what? No, I'm not going for, I've never tried them.
Mm.
They would rather not take that risk.
Mm.
They'll be like, no, I've worked with you before, so I'd rather stick to you. And for me, that, I'm like, oh, no, but we need to develop other people. We need to, and that's why for me, it's not to say that, you know, I'm the best, but I am looking at the best, like, the better than the best.
Right.
And for me, in my perspective, is Julie, because she handled like an African climate summit with all these presidents, and she's always called upon to even go to the World Bank spring meetings.
Right.
You know, and to emcee at a global stage.
Right.
And that's a Kenyan we have.
Yeah.
So I the learning never stops. Mm. That's what I'm just saying. The learning never stops. It's okay. I mean, I'll still do a gig and, you know, whatever comes will come. But I'm always willing to just, you know, keep sharpening. There's a conversation about trying to learn French. I was having a chat with your producer. Chico, in terms of just trying to see how to get... Because if I'm going to go for a gig at the African Development Bank,
country,
I need to get my French right.
Yeah.
Because now we're talking about Africa and Kenyans are really good out there in terms of, you know, our command for English.
Yeah.
But now if I'm going to moderate a panel at the African Development Bank, I just need to have a bit of French in the bag.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went into government and learned the importance of a master's.
Yeah.
Now I'm in the corporate emceeing space, you know, as a pet project, and I feel like I need to do my French right. So let's hope that I can get to that $4,000.
Okay.
$4,000
price point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Last question. Do you have any specific financial targets for yourself for 2024?
For 2024, to better my investment space.
Mm.
I mentioned about the gold business, which is just something that I want to put a bit of money in to concentrate on, just to supplement maybe what I'd get from the business side. If I can put a figure into it, actually on the vision board for this year, I just want to be in the green.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be in the green in terms of like ensuring that my liabilities and my family's liabilities are not really more than the assets or the revenue incomes. Now, having worked for an industry that is highly disrupted, I know what it means when you have a consistent income and then suddenly
it's not there.
So the additional revenue streams for me is a target. If I can put a figure out there, is to say maybe grow my monthly income twofold. That for me is a target for this year. But then again, we have to be very smart and talk about, okay, how is the industry looking?
Yeah.
No one is going to double and triple. I mentioned about those companies that give you a house.
Yeah.
It's no longer there. People are trying to really save.
Yeah.
So speaking to your colleagues at FX, I'm like, wait a minute, can I negotiate for a dollar salary as opposed to a Kenya shillings?
Yeah, salary, right?
Yeah. So those are some of the conversations right now I'm having. Or can I do more of emceeing gigs, you know, abroad and maybe earn the dollars as opposed to Kenya shillings?
Yeah.
So those are the practical steps, I would say. So then you also get a revenue income from the conversion rate as well. Have a mortgage. I need to make sure that is sustainable and it moves as well. I'm trying out other spaces apart from emceeing, also training. So then you can have a bit of... facilitation fees as well. I'm grateful with what we're doing with the Chief of Staff Association. The Chief of Staff is a representative of government body strategy advisors behind the scenes across the world who are from government, military, and in private sector. And the networking there is quite good as well. So I see an opportunity to advance the same and also turn the social capital into the financial space. The Kofisi Centers for Productivity will be holding like some sort of a headhunting conversation around like how do you get yourself as a professional. There's some opportunities, Barack, that are never advertised. And for me, that really, it doesn't pay me, but it has drawn an interest. So why is the CFO of this organization, why was this role not put out there? But it's because they went the headhunting route. So I'm really challenging now to speak to the headhunters and say, okay, how do I get myself headhunted? And how do I get myself out there? So I'm bringing in guys who are in the middle, mid-career, who are trying to get into leadership, and they just don't know how to get there. So yeah, that's 2024, to that's be honest. If I would give you like how it looks in the next, say, first quarter, second quarter, that's a target. But I'm happy that we're back to traveling. Let's do, I don't know, Kigali or Dubai, but based off on what I learned from the previous, this holiday period. We have to save. You really, really have to save. But also just trying to cushion and see how to get out there. But I'm grateful. The learning never stops. Not forget the French.
Okay. Thank you so much, Laban, for coming on. This was our first episode of 2024.
I'm grateful. Wow.
2024.
A good episode. Opportunity now for the resolution. So you'll hold me to account. I hope I'll come back in deck.
December, I'll be like, so did you?
This is the target we had.
2 times your income.
4,000 USD plus.
And see the 4,000 USD MC. Yes. I think we've had quite a bit of. I think you're the first. Well, like I say, anti government, this ex-government person who's come on, and given us some insight on how the government works and how the job scale sort of works. We need to find someone else, actually.
No, please. I mean,
to come and give us a really proper breakdown.
Stories. Maybe get someone who's currently serving. I mentioned to you out there, like I applied for the government spokesperson position.
Yes. That's the one that Hussein has.
So Hussein is State House.
Hussein is State
House. One that Isaac spokesperson. So I'm really passionate about getting it right and communicating government policies. So maybe invite Isaac as well to just, because he's in the current government. Perhaps he would speak more in terms of their targets, what they're doing. But this was the beauty about the power of the no. When I did not get the government spokesperson, I did not like give up and sort of thing. Like I'm now looking at, okay, is it the World Bank? Is it the IFC? So that trying to broaden my scope. So yeah, you mentioned about the government folks. They're really interesting guys out there. So yeah. Isaac, Hussein Mohammed. Isaac.
I don't know if Hussein would come, but we'll see. Me.
Sure is watching.
We'll see. But okay, thanks so much, Lam and Cliff. Enjoy that. We're going to have a handshake now. This is like proper government. Anyway, so we'll see you guys in the next episode. Please remember to comment. Let us know who you want to see this year, what specific industries you want us to cover. Looking forward to what we're able to do this year with Financially Incorrect. See you guys on the next episode.